they foster indiscriminate filing and a lot of numbness to the volume and confusion about where things are, even as good as search functions might be. Because digital storage, without much forethought, has become almost automatic, it is very possible to create an environment of constant input but no utilization. You're creating a library so big and overwhelming, you have limited your capacity to make it functional for the work that's important for you to do. The key here is the regular reviewing and purging of outdated information, as I suggested in a previous chapter, as well as more conscious filtering on the front end as you're processing your input. Is this really necessary or useful for me to keep, or can I trust that I can access it from the internet or other sources if I need it? Incubate. There will probably be things in your intray about which you will say to yourself, there's nothing to do on this now, but there might be later. Examples of this would be an email announcing a Chamber of Commerce breakfast with a guest speaker you might want to hear, but it's 2 weeks away, and you're not sure yet if you'll be at home then or out of town on a business trip. An agenda for a board meeting you've been invited to attend in 3 weeks. No action is required on it, other than you're briefing yourself a day ahead of the meeting by reading the agenda. An advertisement for the next software upgrade for one of your favorite applications. Do you really need this next version? You don't know. You'd rather sleep on it for another week. An idea you had about something you might want to do for next year's annual sales meeting. There's nothing to do on this now, but you'd like to be reminded when the time comes to start planning for it. And a note to yourself about taking a watercolor class, which you have zero time for right now. What do you do with these kinds of things? There are two options that could work. Write them on a someday maybe list, or put a reminder of them on your calendar or in a tickler file. The point of all of these incubation procedures is that they give you a way to get the items off your mind right now and let you feel confident that some reminder of the possible action will resurface at an appropriate time. I'll elaborate on these in more detail in the next chapter on organizing. For now, just put a post-it on such items and label them maybe or remind on October 17, and set them aside in a pending category you will be accumulating for later sorting. One of your extra stack trays is ideal for this purpose. Use it temporarily during this initial processing to gather things to organize later. Afterward, you can use it to hold pending work-in-progress papers and physical reminders of next actions. Reference. Many of the things you will uncover in N will need no action but may have value as potentially useful information about projects and topics. Ideally, you have already set up a workable filing system, as described in Chapter 4, for your reference and support information. As you come across material in your intray and your email, and attachments and web links therein, that you'd like to keep for archival or support purposes, file it. You'll probably discover that there are lots of miscellaneous kinds of things that you want to keep but have piled up in stacks or stuffed into drawers because your reference system was too formal or just plain non-existent. Let me remind you here that a less than 60-second, fun-to-use, general reference filing system within reach of where you sit is a mission-critical component of full implementation of this methodology. In the fast lane of real life, if it's not easy, quick, and fun to file something away, you'll stack or simply accumulate it in instead of organizing. And then it will become much more difficult to keep things processed. Whenever you come across something you want to keep, make a label for it, put it in a file folder, and tuck that into your filing drawer. Or put a post-it on it instructing your assistant to do the same. Or appropriately tag or categorize it digitally. In my early days of coaching, I used to give my clients permission to keep a to-file pile. No longer. I discovered that if you can't get it into your system immediately, you're probably not ever going to. If you won't do it now, you likely won't do it later either. For digital inputs that you want to keep for reference, a plethora of options present themselves. If it's simply an email that you want to keep so you can retrieve it later, I suggest using the storage folders that are usually available in email applications, often in the Navigator column on the side of the user window. Many people leave these non-actionable emails in their in section as a sort of amorphous filing cabinet, which seriously clogs the system. You should feel free to instantly create a new reference file for a new topic, theme, person, or project, and drag or insert the email into it right away. For documents, attachments, text, and graphics in email that you might want to keep, you will have to develop your own filing procedures. These days, there are very effective document storage applications in the cloud, as well as note-taking and organizing programs accessible from multiple devices. The power, variety, and rapid evolvement of this enabling technology belie a recommendation for any one universal best practice. It behooves each of us to experiment, customize, and modify our digital libraries for what works best. The key to keeping it effective will be regular revisiting of our data and how we're organizing it, and keeping it current and usable. Again, the key driver should be, do I still have attention on my reference content or system? If so, create a project and next action to unpack that, to get this significant area for you on cruise control. And if there is an action, what is it? This is perhaps the most fundamental practice of this methodology. If there's something that needs to be done about the item in N, then you need to decide what exactly that next action is. Next action, again, means the next physical, visible activity that would be required to move the situation toward closure. This is both easier and more difficult than it sounds. The next action should be easy to figure out, but there are often some quick analyses and several planning steps that haven't occurred yet in your mind. And these have to happen before you can determine precisely what has to happen to complete the item, even if it's a fairly simple one. Let's look at a sample list of the things that a person might typically have his or her attention on. Clean the garage. Do my taxes. Conference I'm going to. Bobby's birthday. Press release. Performance reviews. Management changes. Although each of these items may seem relatively clear as a task or project, determining the next action on each one will take some thought. Clean the garage. Well, I just have to get in there and start. No, wait a minute. There's a big refrigerator in there that I need to get rid of first. I should find out if John Patrick wants it for his camp. I should call John regarding refrigerator in garage. What about do my taxes? But I actually can't start on them until I have my last investment income documents back. Can't do anything until then, so I'm waiting for documents from Acme Trust. And for the conference I'm going to, I need to find out whether Sandra is going to prepare a press kit for us. I guess I need to email Sandra regarding press kits for the conference. And so forth. The action steps, call John, waiting for documents, email Sandra, are what need to be decided about everything that is actionable in your in-tray. The action step needs to be the absolute next physical thing to do. Remember that these are physical, visible activities. Many people think they've determined the next action when they get it down to set meeting. But that's not the next action because it's not descriptive of physical behavior. How do you set a meeting? Well, it could be with a phone call or an email, but to whom? Decide. If you don't decide now, you'll still have to decide at some other point. And what this process is designed to do is actually get you to finish the thinking exercise about this item. If you haven't identified the next physical action required to kickstart it, there will be a psychological gap every time you think about it, even vaguely. You'll tend to resist noticing it, which leads to procrastination. When you get to a phone or to your computer, you want to have all your thinking completed so you can use the tools you have and the location you're in to more easily get things done, having already defined what there is to do. What if you say to yourself, well, the next thing I need to do is decide what to do about this? That's a tricky one. Deciding isn't really an action because actions take time and deciding doesn't. There's always some physical activity that can be done to facilitate your decision making. 99% of the time, you just need more information before you can make a decision. That additional information can come from external sources, call Susan to get her input on the proposal, or from internal thinking. draft ideas about new reorganization. Either way, there's still a next action to be determined in order to move the project forward. Once you decide what the action step is, you have three options once you decide what the next action really is. Do it, if the action takes less than 2 minutes. Delegate it, if you're not the most appropriate person to do the action. Or defer it into your organization system as an option for work to do later. Do it. If the next action can be done in 2 minutes or less, do it when you first pick the item up. If the email requires just a 30-second reading and then a quick yes, no, other response back to the sender, do it now. If you can browse the catalog in just a minute or two to see if there might be anything of interest in it, browse away and then toss it, root it, or reference it as required. If the next action on something is to leave a quick message on someone's voicemail, make the call now. Even if the item is not a high priority one, do it now if you're ever going to do it at all. The rationale for the 2-minute rule is that it's more or less the point where it starts taking longer to store and track an item than to deal with it the first time it's in your hands. In other words, it's the efficiency cutoff. If the thing's not important enough to be done, throw it away. If it is, and if you're going to do it sometime, the efficiency factor should come into play. Many people find that getting into the habit of following the 2-minute rule creates a dramatic improvement in their productivity. One vice president of a large software company told me that it gave him an additional hour a day of quality discretionary time. He was one of those 300 email a day high-tech executives, highly focused for most of the workday on three key initiatives. Many of those emails were from people who reported to him, and they needed his eyes on something, his comments and okays, in order to move forward. But because they were not on a topic in his rifle sights, he would just stage the emails in and get to it later. After several thousand of them piled up, he would have to go into work and spend whole weekends trying to catch up. That would have been okay if he were 26, when everything's an adrenaline rush anyway, but he was in his 30s and had young kids. Working all weekend was no longer acceptable behavior. When I coached him, he went through all 800-plus emails he currently had in. It turned out that a lot could be dumped, quite a few needed to be filed as reference, and many others required less than 2-minute replies that he whipped through. I checked with him a year later, and he was still current. He never let his emails mount up beyond a screenful anymore. He said it had changed the nature of his division because of the dramatic decrease in his own response time. His staff thought he was now made of Teflon. That's a rather dramatic testimonial, but it's an indication of just how critical some of these simple processing behaviors can be, especially as the volume and speed of the input increase for you personally. 2 minutes is, in fact, just a guideline. If you have a long open window of time in which to process your in-tray, you can extend the cutoff for each item to 5 or 10 minutes. If you've got to get to the bottom of all your input rapidly in order to figure out how best to use your afternoon, then you may want to shorten the time to 1 minute or even 30 seconds so you can get through everything a little faster. It's not a bad idea to time yourself for a few of these while you're becoming familiar with the process. Most people I work with have difficulty estimating how long 2 minutes actually is, and they greatly underestimate how long certain actions are likely to take. For instance, if your action is to leave someone a message, and you get the real person instead of his or her voicemail, the call will usually take quite a bit longer than 2 minutes. There's nothing you really need to track about your 2-minute actions. You just do them. If, however, you take an action and don't finish the project with that one action, you'll need to clarify what's next on it and manage that according to the same criteria. For instance, if you act to replace a cartridge in your printer and discover that you're now out of extra cartridges, you'll want to decide on the next action about getting them. Order printer cartridge refills online, and do, delegate, or defer it appropriately. Adhere to the 2-minute rule and see how much you get done in the process of clearing out your in stacks. Many people are amazed by how many 2-minute actions are possible, often on some of their most critical current projects. They are also delighted with applying this approach to small incompletions that have been lying around and nagging at them much too long. The 2-minute rule has become a salvation for many in getting control of their huge email volume. In an active email environment, it is likely that at least 30% of your actionable emails will require less than 2 minutes to respond and dispatch, assuming you have decent keyboard skills. If you're engaging with your email, holding to this suggestion quite significantly improves responsiveness and productivity in your ecosystem. When I spend time with someone cleaning up his or her email inventory, invariably there are dozens of quick actions generated that move the needle on multiple fronts, unsticking significant backlog. That said, you shouldn't become a slave to spending your day doing 2-minute actions. This rule should be applied primarily when you are engaging with new input. For example, processing your in-tray, interacting with someone in your office or home, or simply dealing with some random intersection in the hallway. But if you don't do it when it shows up, and you do still need to do it, you will have to take the time and energy to capture, clarify, and track it to prevent its encroachment into your head. Delegate it. If the next action is going to take longer than 2 minutes, ask yourself, am I the best person to be doing it? If not, hand it off to the appropriate party in a systematic format. Delegation is not always downstream. You may decide, this has got to get over to customer service, or my boss needs to put her eyes on this next, or I need my partner's point of view on this. A systematic format could be any of the following. Send the appropriate party an email. Write a note or an overnote on paper and route the item out to that person. Send him or her a text or leave a voicemail. Add it as an agenda item on a list for your next real-time conversation with that person. Or talk to him or her directly, either face-to-face or by phone, text, or instant message. Although any of these options can work, I would, with some exceptions, recommend them in that order, beginning to end. Email is usually the fastest mode in the system. It provides an electronic record, and the receiver gets to deal with it at his or her convenience. Written notes are next, because they too can get into the system immediately, and the recipient then has a physical particle to use as an organizational reminder. If you're passing on paper-based material as part of a handoff, a written communication is obviously the way to go. As with email, the person you hand it off to can then deal with it on his or her own schedule. Voicemail and texting can be efficient, and many professionals live by it. The downside is that tracking becomes an additional requirement for both you and the recipient. What you say is not always what gets heard, and texts are infamously cryptic. Next would be saving the communication on an agenda list or in a folder for your next regular meeting with the person. At times, this is necessary because of the sensitive or detailed nature of the topic, but it then must wait to get moving until that meeting occurs. The least preferable option would be to interrupt what both you and the person are doing in the moment to talk about the item. This is immediate, but it hampers workflow for both of you and has the same downside as voicemail, no written record. Tracking the handoff. If you do delegate an action to someone else, and if you care at all whether something happens as a result, you'll need to track it. As I walk you through in the next chapter about organizing, you'll see that a significant category to manage is waiting for. As you develop your own customized system, what you eventually hand off and then track could look like a list in a planner, a file folder holding separate papers for each item, and or a list categorized as waiting for in your software. For now, if you don't have a trusted system set up already, just put a note on a piece of paper, waiting for reply from Bob, and put that into a pending stack of notes in a separate pile or tray that may result from your processing. What if the ball is already in someone else's court? In the example cited previously about waiting for some documents to arrive so you can do your taxes, the next action is currently on someone else's plate. In such situations, you will also want to track the action as a delegated item or as a waiting for. On the paper that says, "Do my taxes," write something like, "Waiting for tax documents from Acme Trust," and put that into your pending stack. It's important that you record the date on everything that you hand off to others. This, of all the categories in your personal system, is the most crucial one to keep tabs on. The few times you will actually want to refer to that information, but I called and ordered that on March 12th, will make it worth establishing this as a lifelong habit. defer it. It's likely that most of the next actions you determine for things in N will be yours to do and will take longer than 2 minutes to complete. A call you need to make to a customer, an email to your team that you need to spend a little time thinking about and drafting, a gift you need to buy for your brother at the sporting goods store, a software application you need to download from the web and try out, a conversation you must have with your life partner about the school you're thinking of sending your daughter to. All of these fit that description. These actions will have to be written down somewhere and then organized in the appropriate categories so you can access them when you need to. For the moment, go ahead and put post-its on the pieces of paper in N with the action written on them and add these to the pending stack of papers that have been processed. The pending things that are left. If you follow the instructions in this chapter, you'll dump a mess of things, file a bunch, do a lot of 2-minute actions, and hand off a number of items to other people. You'll also wind up with a stack of items that have actions associated with them that you still need to do, soon, someday, or on a specific date, and reminders of things you're waiting on from other people. This pending group is made up of the actions you've delegated or deferred. It is what still needs to be organized in some fashion in your personal system, a topic I'll cover in step-by-step detail in the next chapter. Identifying the projects you have. This last step in getting to the bottom of N requires a shift in perspective from the single action details to the larger picture, your projects. Again, I define a project as any outcome you're committed to achieving that will take more than one action step to complete. If you look through an inventory of actions that you have already been generating, call Frank about the car alarm, email Bernadette regarding the conference materials, you'll no doubt recognize a number of things that are larger than the single action you've defined. There's still going to be something to do about the car alarm after the call to Frank, and there will still be something to handle about the conference after the email to Bernadette. I hope you're able to see the very practical reason for defining projects as broadly as I do. If the action step you've identified will not complete the commitment, then you'll need some stake in the ground to keep reminding you of actions you have pending until you have closure. You need to make a list of projects. A projects list may include anything from give holiday party, to divest the software product line, to finalize compensation package. The purpose of this list is not to reflect your priorities, but just to ensure that you've got placeholders for all those open loops. Whether you draw up your projects list while you're initially processing your entry or after you've set up your action list doesn't really matter. It just needs to be done at some point, and it must be maintained, as it's the key driver for reviewing where you are and where you want to be, and to maintain a sense of week-to-week control of your life. For now, let's make sure your organizing setup is all systems go. Chapter 7. Organizing. Setting up the right buckets. Having a total and seamless system of organization in place gives you tremendous power because it allows your mind to let go of lower-level thinking and graduate to intuitive focusing, undistracted by matters that haven't been dealt with appropriately. But your physical organization system must be better than your mental one in order for that to happen. Being organized means nothing more or less than where something is matches what it means to you. If you decide you want to keep something as reference and you put it where your reference material needs to be, that's organized. If you think you need a reminder about a call you need to make, as long as you put that reminder where you want reminders of phone calls to make, you're organized. As simple as that sounds, it begs a very big question. What does something mean to you? It turns out that much of what people are trying to organize has not been clarified as per the previous chapter. And even once it has, there are more refined distinctions that are possible, which will add greater creativity and control for you. I will expand on some of those in this chapter, as I'll lead you through the organizing steps and tools that will be required as you process your entry. As you initially process in, you'll create lists and groupings of things you want to organize, and you'll invariably think of additional items to include. In other words, your organization system is not something that you'll necessarily create all at once in a vacuum. It will evolve as you process your stuff and test out whether you have put everything in the best place for you. It should and will evolve as you do. The core distinctions of what things mean to you will be true forever, but the best structure for you to manage them a year from now may look different than what you come up with dealing with your world today. The basic categories. There are 7 primary types of things that you'll want to keep track of and manage from an organizational and operational perspective. 1. A projects list. 2. Project support material. 3. Calendar actions and information. 4. Next actions lists. 5. A waiting for list. 6. Reference material. 7. A someday maybe list. The importance of hard edges. It's critical that all of these categories be kept pristinely distinct from one another. They each represent a discrete type of agreement we make with ourselves to be reminded of at a specific time and in a specific way. And if they lose their edges and begin to blend, much of the value of organizing will be lost. That's why capturing and clarifying what your relationship to them is specifically is primary to getting organized. Most people try to create more control in their world by just getting organized, and they wind up rearranging incomplete inventories of still unclear things. Once you've gone through my previously suggested processes, however, you will have very clear contents of what you need to track and a very practical way to sort them and create their descriptors. If you neglect this categorization and allow things of different meanings into the same visual or mental grouping, you will tend to go psychologically numb to the contents. If you put reference materials in the same pile as things you still want to read, for example, you'll go unconscious to the stack. If you put items on your next actions lists that really need to go on the calendar because they have to occur on specific days, then you won't trust your calendar and you'll continually have to reassess your action lists. If you have projects that you're not going to be doing anything about for some time, they must go on your someday maybe list so you can relate to the projects list with the rigorous action-generating focus it needs. And if something you're waiting for is included on one of your action lists, non-productive rethinking will continually bog you down. All you really need are lists and folders. Once you know what you need to keep track of, covered in the previous chapter, clarifying, all you really need are lists and folders, totally sufficient tools for reminders, reference, and support materials. Your lists, which, as I've indicated, could also be items in folders, will keep track of projects and someday maybes, as well as the actions you'll need to take on your active open loops. Folders, digital or paper-based, will be required to hold your reference material and the support information for active projects. Lots of people have been making lists for years, but have never found the procedure to be particularly effective. There's rampant skepticism about systems as simple as the one I'm recommending. But most list makers haven't put the appropriate things on their lists, or have left them incomplete, which has kept the lists themselves from being very functional for keeping your head clear. Once you know what goes on the lists, however, things get much easier. Then you just need a way to manage them. As I've said, you shouldn't bother to create some external structuring of the priorities on your lists that you'll then have to rearrange or rewrite as things change. Attempting to impose such scaffolding has been a big source of frustration in many people's organizing. You'll be prioritizing more intuitively as you see the whole list against quite a number of shifting variables. The list is just a way for you to keep track of the total inventory of active things to which you have made a commitment, and to have that inventory available for review. When I refer to a list, keep in mind that I mean nothing more than a grouping of items with some similar characteristic. A list could look like one of at least 3 things. 1. A file folder or container with separate paper notes for the items within the category. 2. An actual list on a titled piece of paper, often within a loose leaf organizer or planner. Or 3. An inventory of items on a list in a software program or in a digital mobile device. Organizing action reminders. If you've emptied your in tray, you'll undoubtedly have created a stack of pending reminders for yourself, representing longer than 2-minute actions that cannot be delegated to someone else. You'll probably have anywhere from 20 to 60 or 70 or more such items. You'll also have accumulated reminders of things that you've handed off to other people, and perhaps some things that need to be placed on your calendar or in a someday maybe holder. You'll want to sort all of this into groupings that make sense to you so you can review them as options for work to do when you have time. You'll also want to divide them in the most appropriate way physically to organize those groups, whether as items in folders or on lists, either paper-based or digital. The actions that go on your calendar. For the purposes of organization, as I've said, there are two basic kinds of actions: those that must be done on a certain day and or at a particular time, and those that just need to be done as soon as you can get to them around your other calendar items, some perhaps with a final due date. Calendared action items can be either time-specific, for example, 10 o'clock to 11 o'clock, meet with Jim, or day-specific, call Rachel Tuesday to see if she got the proposal. As you were processing your entry, you probably came across things that you put right into your calendar as they showed up. You may have realized that the next action on getting a medical checkup, for example, was to call and make the appointment, and so, since the action required 2 minutes or less, you actually did it when it occurred to you. Writing the appointment on your calendar as you made it would then have been common sense. What many want to do, however, based on perhaps old habits of writing daily to-do lists, is put actions on the calendar that they think they'd really like to get done next Monday, say, but that actually might not, and that might then have to be moved to following days. Resist this impulse. You need to trust your calendar as sacred territory, reflecting the exact hard edges of your day's commitments, which should be noticeable at a glance while you're on the run. That'll be much easier if the only things in there are those that you absolutely have to get done or know about on that day. When the calendar is relegated to its proper role in organizing, the majority of the actions that you need to do are left in the category of as soon as possible against all the other things I have to do. Organizing as soon as possible actions by context. Over many years, I have discovered that the best way to be reminded of an as soon as I can action is by the particular context required for that action. That is, either the tool or the location or the situation needed to complete it. For instance, if the action requires a computer, it should go on an at computer list. If your action demands that you be out and moving around in the world, such as stopping by the bank or going to the hardware store, the errands list would be the appropriate place to track it. If the next step is to talk about something face-to-face with your partner, Emily, putting it into an Emily folder or list makes the most sense. How discrete these categories will need to be will depend on, 1, how many actions you actually have to track, and 2, how often you change the context within which to do them. If you are that rare person who has only 25 next actions, a single next actions list might suffice. It could include items as diverse as buy nails, talk to boss about staff changes, and draft ideas about committee meeting. If, however, you have 50 or 100 next actions pending, keeping all those on one big list would make it too difficult to see what you need to see. Each time you got any window of time to do something, you'd have to do unproductive resorting. If you happen to be on a short break at a conference, during which you might be able to make some calls, you'd have to identify the calls among a big batch of unrelated items. When you went out to do odds and ends, you'd probably want to pick out your errands and make another list. Another productivity factor that this kind of organization supports is leveraging your energy when you're in a certain mode. When you're in phone mode, it helps to make a lot of phone calls. Just crank down your calls list. When your computer is up and running and you're cruising along digitally, it's useful to get as much done online as you can without having to shift into another kind of activity. It takes more energy than most people realize to unhook out of one set of behaviors and get into another kind of rhythm and tool set. And obviously, when a key person is sitting in front of you in your office, you'd be wise to have all the things you need to talk about with him or her immediately at hand. The most common categories of action reminders. You'll probably find that at least a few of the following common list headings for next actions will make sense for you. Calls, at computer, errands, at office, miscellaneous stuff, at home, anywhere, agendas, for people in meetings, read, review. Calls. This is the list of all the phone calls you need to make. You can work off it as long as you have a phone available. The more mobile you are, the more useful you'll find it to have one single list of all your calls, those strange little windows of time that you wind up with when you're off site, out and about, traveling, on a break, or waiting for a plane, or for your kid to come out from school, offer a perfect opportunity to make use of that list. Having a discrete calls category makes it much easier to focus and intuitively pick the best one to make in the moment. I suggest that you take the time to record the phone number alongside each item. There are many situations in which you would probably make the call if the number was already there in front of you, but not if you had to look it up. And if you're using a mobile device, then only a tap is required to engage. At computer. If you work with a computer, particularly if you move around with a laptop, tablet, or have a computer at work and another at home, it can be helpful to group all those actions that you need to do when it's on and running. This will allow you to see all your options for computer work to do, reminding you of the emails you need to send, the documents you need to draft or edit, and so on. Because I fly a lot, I maintain an online action list separate from my at computer one. When I'm on a plane without a Wi-Fi service, I can't connect to the web or my servers, as many actions require. So instead of having to rethink what I can and can't do whenever I look at my at computer list, I can trust that none of my at computer actions require that I be connected, which frees my mind to make choices based on other criteria. If you only do at computer work at your office or at your home, you could incorporate those actions on those location-specific lists, though you might still find it functional to see reminders of computer work grouped together when you're sitting in that context. On the other hand, if your work and activities are primarily mobile-centric, and you could be taking actions equally on a laptop, tablet, or smartphone, then parking those reminders on a single digital context list or folding them into the Anywhere category might work best. Errands. It makes a lot of sense to group together in one place reminders of all the things you need to do when you're out and about. When you know you need to go somewhere, it's great to be able to look at that list to allow for the option of handling numerous things along the way in one trip. Actions like get stock certificates from bank deposit box, pick up suit at the tailor, and buy flowers for Robin at the florist would all go here. This list could, of course, be nothing more elaborate than a post-it that you keep in your planner or on your refrigerator door, or in an errands category in some digital task manager. It's often helpful to track sublists within individual errands items. For instance, as soon as you realize you need something from the hardware store, you might want to make hardware store the list item and then append a sublist of all the things you want to pick up there as you think of them. On the low-tech end, you could create a hardware store post-it. On the high-tech side, if you were using a digital list, you could attach a note to hardware store on your list and input the details there. One thrust in personal productivity technology, to some degree precipitated by the popularity of this GTD methodology, is the development of location-based reminders. Your mobile device will sense, given your GPS reading, that you are at a hardware store, or at home, or downtown, and it will then alert you to actions tied to that physical environment. This makes sense in principle, but in practice, with all the variables involved, and the desirability to overview our total inventory of actions from multiple angles, these will only be useful as a nice option to add to a rigorously managed list, as part of a totally reviewed and integrated system. Assuming this will keep your head clear and not miss something you'd want to see is still quite over-optimistic about that technology and its usage. At office. If you work in an office, there will be certain things that you can do only there, and a list of those things will be useful to have in front of you then. Though, obviously, if you have a phone and a computer in your office, and you have calls and at computer as separate lists, they'll be in play as well. I'd use an office actions or at office list for anything that required me being physically present there to take the action, such as purging an office filing cabinet or printing and reviewing a large document with a staff person. A major trend now is for organizations to become more open, flexible, and virtual. Hoteling, that is, not having a permanent office, but rather plugging in any available location, is on the rise. Consequently, at office could mean simply an action that requires being at any of several company locations. Or, for some people, it's useful to have both an at-office A and an at-office B list, for those things that are still discreetly tied to one physical location or another. At home. Many actions can be done only at home, and it makes sense to keep a list specific to that context. I'm sure you've got numerous personal and around-the-house projects, and often the next thing to do on them is just to do them. Hang new watercolor print, organize travel accessories, and switch closets to winter clothes would be typical items for this grouping. If you have an office at home, as I do, anything that can be done only there goes on the at-home list. If you work only at home and don't go to another office, you won't need an at-office list at all. The at-home list could suffice. Similar to people who work at various locations, many people have multiple personal work environments, such as vacation homes, boats, and even the local gourmet coffee shop or cafe. At Starbucks can be a fine categorization for an action list. Agendas. I use agenda in the U.S. American meaning, items to cover with someone or in a meeting, versus calendar, schedule, or diary in other cultures. Invariably, you'll find that many of your next actions need to either occur in a real-time interaction with someone or be brought up in a committee, team, or staff meeting. You have to talk to your partner about an idea for next year. You want to check with your life partner about his schedule for the spring. You need to delegate a task to your assistant that's too complicated to explain in an email. And you must make an announcement at the Monday staff meeting about the change in expense report policies. These next actions should be put on separate agenda lists for each of those people and for that meeting, assuming you attend it regularly. Professionals who keep a file folder to hold all the things they need to go over with their boss already use a version of this method. If you're conscientious about determining all your next actions, though, you may find that you'll need somewhere between 3 and 15 of these kinds of lists. I recommend that separate lists be kept for bosses, partners, assistants, and children. You should also keep the same kind of list for your attorney, financial advisor, accountant, and/or computer consultant, as well as for anyone else with whom you might have more than one thing to go over the next time you talk on the phone or in person. If you participate in standing meetings, staff meetings, project meetings, board meetings, committee meetings, parent-teacher meetings, whatever, they too deserve their own lists, in which you collect things that will need to be addressed on those occasions. Often you'll want to keep a running list of things to go over with someone you'll be interacting with only for a limited period of time. For instance, if you have a contractor doing a significant piece of work on your house or property, you can create a list for him for the duration of the project. As you're walking around the site after he's left for the day, you may notice several things you need to talk with him about, and you'll want that list to be easy to capture and to access as needed. Given the usefulness of this type of list, your system should allow you to add agendas ad hoc, as needed quickly and simply. For example, inserting a page or a list for a person or a meeting within an agenda section of a loose-leaf notebook planner takes only seconds, as does adding a dedicated note within an agenda category in your digital tools. Read review. You will no doubt have discovered in your intray a number of things for which your next action is to read. I hope you've held to the 2-minute rule and dispatched many of those quick skim items already, tossing, filing, or rooting them forward as appropriate. To read printed items that you know will demand more than 2 minutes of your time are usually best managed in a separate physical stack tray labeled read/review. This is still a list by my definition, but one that's more efficiently dealt with by grouping the documents and magazines themselves in a tray and or portable folder. For many people, the read-review stack can get quite large. That's why it's critical that the pile be reserved only for those longer than 2-minute things that you actually want to read when you have time. That can be daunting enough in itself, but things get seriously out of control and psychologically numbing when the edges of this category are not clearly defined. A pristine delineation will at least make you conscious of the inventory, and if you're like most people, having some type of self-regulating mechanism will help you become more aware of what you want to keep and what you should just get rid of. Some professionals, for example, attorneys, still work with significant printed materials, and although most of their documents may be generated and maintained in digital form, working with the document in physical form still remains the optimal way to deal with it. In those cases, it often makes sense, in addition to a read-review box or tray, to have a review-respond category for the more rigorous reading that requires a different kind of focus. It's practical to have organized reading material at hand when you're on your way to a meeting that may be starting late, a seminar that may have a window of time when nothing is going on, a dentist appointment that may keep you waiting, or, of course, if you're going to have some time on a train or plane. Those are all great opportunities to browse and work through that kind of reading. People who don't have their read-review material organized can waste a lot of time, since life is full of weird little windows when it could be used. Given the amount of digital input we're getting that includes data to read and view, much of which is not really critical to our work or life, but is potentially interesting or fun, it can be useful to create an organizational bucket within that world for such things. A review watch file in your email folder system, or a surf web action list, could be a good place to hold emails with links to recommended videos, blogs, or online articles. Organizing waiting for. Like reminders of the actions you need to do, reminders of all the things that you're waiting to get back from or get done by others have to be sorted and grouped. You won't necessarily be tracking discrete action steps here, but more often final deliverables or projects that others are responsible for, such as the tickets you've ordered from the theater, the scanner that's coming for the office, the okay on the proposal from your client, and so on. When the next action on something is up to someone else, you don't need an action reminder, just a trigger about what you're waiting for and from whom. Your role is to review that list as often as you need to and assess whether you ought to be taking an action, such as checking the status or lighting a fire in some way under the project. For many people, especially those in managerial or supervisory positions, getting this inventory of unfulfilled commitments that we care about from others, captured, current, complete, and reviewed, creates tremendous relief and improved focus going forward. You'll probably find that it works best to keep this waiting for list close at hand, in the same system as your next action's reminder lists. The responsibility for the next step may bounce back and forth many times before a project is finished. For example, you may need to make a call to a vendor to request a proposal, which then goes to your waiting for list. When the proposal comes in, you have to review it. It lands in your read-review tray or on your at-computer list. Once you've gone over it, you send it to your boss for her approval. Now it's back on your waiting-for list, and so on. Digital list managers, as well as low-tech papers in separate folders, have an advantage here because they let you easily move an item from one category to another as the action changes, without your having to rewrite or rethink anything. It's also very useful to have your waiting for list available when you're meeting with or talking to anyone who might be responsible for any of those deliverables. It is much more elegant to broach a conversation early on, such as, "Oh yeah, how's it going with the Gonzalez proposal?" than to wait until it's overdue and the situation is in a stress mode. It's important for this category in particular to include the date that each item is requested for each entry, as well as any agreed upon due date. Follow-up is much more meaningful when you can say, "But I placed the order March 20th, or "You've had the proposal now for 3 weeks. In my experience, just this one tactical detail is worth its weight in gold. You'll get a great feeling when you know that your waiting for list is the complete inventory of everything you care about that other people are supposed to be doing. Using the original item as its own action reminder. The most efficient way to track your action reminders is to add them to lists or folders as they occur to you. The originating trigger won't be needed after you have processed it, You might take notes in the meeting with your boss, but you can toss those after you've pulled out any projects and actions associated with them. While some people try to archive texts or voicemails that they still need to do something about, that's not the most effective way to manage the reminders embedded in them. There are some exceptions to this rule, however. Certain kinds of input will most efficiently serve as their own reminders of required actions, rather than your having to write something about them on a list. This is particularly true for some paper-based materials and some email. Managing paper-based workflow. Some things are their own best reminders of work to be done. The category of read-review articles, publications, and documents is a good example. It would obviously be overkill to write Review Vogue magazine on some action list when you could just as easily toss the magazine itself into your read-review tray to act as the trigger. Another example, if you're still doing paper-based bill paying, you'll probably find it easier to deal with the bills by paying them all at one time, so you keep them in a folder or stack tray labeled Bills to Pay, or, more generically, Financial to Process. Similarly, receipts for expense reporting should be either dealt with at the time they're generated or kept in their own Receipts to Process envelope or folder. This approach can be dangerous, however, if you don't put those bills to pay or receipts to process in front of your face as consistently as you should. Just having them organized isn't sufficient to get them off your mind. You've also got to trust that you will appropriately review and deal with them. The specific nature of your work, your input, and your workstation may make it more efficient to organize other categories using only the original document itself. A customer service professional, for instance, may deal with numerous requests that show up in some standard form, and in that case, maintaining a tray or file, paper or digital, containing only those actionable items is the best way to manage them. An attorney or accountant may deal with documents they need to spend time reviewing to determine actions, which could be stacked in a tray on the desk with items of that specific nature. Whether it makes more sense to write reminders on a list, or to use the originating documents in a tray or folder or digital directory will depend to a great extent on logistics. Could you use those reminders somewhere other than at your desk? If so, the portability of the material should be considered. If you couldn't possibly do that work anywhere but at your desk, then managing reminders of it solely at your workstation is the better choice. Whichever option you select, the reminder should be in visibly discrete categories based upon the next action required. If the next action on a service order is to make a call, it should be in a calls group. If the action step is to review information and input it into the computer, it should be labeled at computer. Most undermining of the effectiveness of many workflow systems I see is the fact that all the documents of one type, for example, service requests, are kept in a single tray or file, even though different kinds of actions may be required on each one. One request needs a phone call, another needs data reviewed, and still another is waiting for someone to get back with some information, but they're all sorted together. This arrangement can cause a person's mind to go numb to the stack because of all the decisions that are still pending about the next action level of doing. My personal system is highly portable, with almost everything kept on lists, but I still maintain a read-review stack tray in my office and the traveling version as a plastic folder with the same title. Though I store and read some magazines digitally, it's still both logistically functional and aesthetically pleasing to me to have the physical version at hand. Managing email-based workflow. Like some paper-based materials, emails that need action are sometimes best as their own reminders, in this case within the email system itself. This is especially true if you get a lot of email and spend a lot of your work time with your email software active at hand. Emails that you need to act on may then be stored within the system instead of having their embedded actions written out or distributed on another list. Many people have found it helpful to set up two or three unique folders on their email navigator bars. True, most folders in email should be used for reference or archived materials, but it's also possible to set up a workable system that will keep your actionable messages discreetly organized outside the in area itself, which is where most people tend to keep them. If you happen to have a lifestyle that seldom has more than one screenful of undealt with emails at any one time. Simply keeping them there as a reminder of your work at hand would probably suffice. As soon as the volume expands to something you can't see at a glance, then organizing them outside your in area makes much more sense. If you choose this route, I recommend that you create one folder for any longer than 2-minute emails that you need to act on. Again, you should be able to dispatch many messages right off the bat by following the 2-minute rule. The folder name should begin with a prefix letter or symbol so that, one, it looks different from your reference folders, and two, it sits at the top of your folders in the navigator bar. Use something like the @ or the hyphen, whichever will sort into your system at the top. Your resulting @action folder will hold those emails that you need to do something about. Next, you can create a folder titled @waitingfor, which will show up in the same place as the @action folder. Then, as you receive emails that indicate that someone is going to do something you care about tracking, you can drag them over into the @waitingfor file. It can also hold reminders for anything that you delegate via email. When you forward something or use email to make a request or delegate an action, just save a CC or BCC copy into your @waitingfor file. Some email applications allow you to move or connect your emails into a task list or area, which can work equally well. It will require, however, getting sufficiently familiar with that function within the software to make it easy and seamless. Some applications allow you to file a copy of an email into one of your folders as you send it, with a Send and File button. Others will simultaneously save only into your universal Sent Mail folder. In the latter case, what seems to work best for many is to copy CC or BCC themselves when they delegate via email, and then to put that copy into their @waitingfor folder. Getting email in to empty. The method I just described will enable you to actually get everything out of your email in tray, which will be a huge boon to your clarity about and control of your day-to-day work. You'll reclaim in as in, so anything residing there will be like a new message in your voicemail or an unread text on your mobile device. Clues that you need to process something. Most people use their email in for staging still undecided actionable things, reference, and even trash, a practice that rapidly numbs the mind. They know they've got to reassess everything every time they glance at the screen. Again, getting in empty doesn't mean you've handled everything. It means that you've deleted what you could, filed what you wanted to keep but don't need to act on, done the less than 2-minute responses, and moved into your reminder folders all the things you're waiting for and all your actionable emails. Now you can open the @action file and review the emails that you've determined you need to spend time on. Isn't that process easier to relate to than fumbling through multiple screens, fearing all the while that you may miss something that'll blow up on you? A caution about dispersing reminders of your actions. There's an obvious danger in putting reminders of things you need to do somewhere out of sight. The function of an organization system is primarily to supply the reminders you need to see when you need to see them, so that you can trust your choices about what you're doing and what you're not doing. Before you leave your office for the day, or before you decide to spend a big part of your day doing something previously unplanned, those actionable emails that you still have pending must be reviewed individually, just like your calls and @computer lists. In essence, @action is an extension of your @computer list and should be handled in exactly the same fashion. Your paper-based pending workflow must likewise be assessed like a list if the paper materials are being used as your only reminders. Distributing action triggers in a folder, on lists, and/or in an email system is perfectly okay, as long as you review all of the categories to which you've entrusted your triggers equally as required. You don't want things lurking in the recesses of your systems and not being used for their intended purpose, reminding you. The digital world can be dangerous in this regard because as soon as data is off screen, it can tend to disappear as a viable prompt. This has caused many computer-savvy people to revert to a paper planner. Its physicality and visual obviousness can create much more trust that their reminders will actually remind them. In order to hang out with friends or take a long, aimless walk and truly have nothing on your mind, you've got to know where all your actionable items are located, what they are, and that they will wait. And you need to be able to do that in a few seconds, not days. Organizing project reminders. Creating and maintaining one list of all your projects, that is, again, every commitment or desired outcome that may require more than one action step to complete, can be a profound experience. You probably have more of them than you think. If you haven't done so already, I recommend that initially you make a projects list in a very simple format, similar to the ones you've used for your lists of actions. It can be a category in a digital organizer, a page in a loose leaf planner, or even a single file folder labeled projects, with either a master list or separate sheets of paper for each one. The projects list or lists. The projects list is not meant to hold plans or details about your projects themselves, nor should you try to keep it arranged by priority or size or urgency. It's just a comprehensive index of your open loops. You actually won't be working off the projects list during your moment-to-moment activities. For the most part, your calendar, action lists, and any unexpected tasks that come up will constitute your tactical and immediate focus. Remember, you can't do a project. You can only do the action steps it requires. Being aware of the horizon represented by your projects, however, is critical for extending your comfort with your control and focus into longer reaches of time. The real value of the projects list lies in the complete review it can provide at least once a week, ensuring that you have action steps defined for all of your projects and that nothing is slipping through the cracks. A quick glance at this list from time to time will enhance your underlying sense of control. You'll also know that you have an inventory available to you and to others whenever it seems advisable to evaluate workloads. The value of a complete projects list. The very broad and simple definition of a project that I've given, more than one action needed to achieve a desired result, provides an important net to capture the more subtle things that pull or push on your consciousness. If you work in an industry that is formally project-focused, manufacturing, software, consulting, etc., it may be challenging to realize that look into getting a dog for our kids and find a good tailor are projects. But whether you call them projects or something else, they still demand a certain kind of attention to relieve their pressure on your internal space. Getting the inventory of all those things complete, current, and clear for yourself, and acquiring the habit of maintaining it that way, could be one of the most valuable things you do to enable stress-free productivity for yourself from now on. Here are some of the reasons why. It's critical for control and focus. It alleviates subtle tensions. It's the core of the weekly review. And it facilitates relationship management. Critical for control and focus. It is impossible to be truly relaxed and in your productive state when things you've told yourself you need to handle continue to pull at your mind, whether they be little or big. It seems that I've got to get my driver's license renewed can take up as much space in your head as I need to formulate the agenda for next year's conference, when an external list of such things is not complete and reviewed regularly. Alleviate subtle tensions. The smaller or more subtle things we tell ourselves we need to deal with create some of the more challenging stresses to handle, simply because they are not so much in your face. Projects often don't show up in nice, neat packages. They start as what seems a simple situation, communication, or activity, but they slowly morph into something bigger than you expected. You thought you handled getting your daughter into preschool, but now there's a problem with the registration forms or a change in the logistical details. You thought the invoice you sent was complete and accurate, but now the client says he didn't agree to something you billed him for. Getting these kinds of situations identified and into your system with desired outcomes for appropriate engagement creates a wealth of fresh energy with unexpected positive results. Core of the weekly review. As I have indicated in other places, The weekly review is the critical success factor for marrying your larger commitments to your day-to-day activities. And a complete projects list remains the linchpin for that orientation. Ensuring weekly that you're okay about what you're doing or not doing with a dog for your kids, along with what you're doing or not doing about next year's conference, is an essential practice. But that projects list must already be there, in at least a somewhat recent form, before you have the capability to think about things from that perspective. Facilitates relationship management. Whether you are in conversation with your boss, your staff, your partner, or your family, having a sense of control and overview of all your commitments that may have relevance in your relationships with them is extremely valuable. Invariably, there are challenges with allocating limited resources, your time, your money, your attention. And when others are involved with you in ways that pull on those resources, being able to negotiate, and frequently renegotiate, those explicit and implicit agreements is the only way to effectively relieve those inherent pressures. Once executives and spouses and staff people get the picture of the commitments of their work and life, it triggers extremely important and constructive conversations with those involved. But it doesn't happen without that complete list. Where to look for projects still to uncover? There are three primary areas in which you are likely to have hidden projects. First, current activities. Second, higher horizon interests and commitments. And third, current problems, issues, and opportunities. Current activities. Often there are projects that need to be captured from a simple inventory of your calendar, your action lists, and your workspaces. What meetings are on your schedule, past or upcoming, because of some outcome you're committed to achieving that the meeting itself does not complete or resolve? You may notice that a conference call you've been scheduled for is about a client request for a new custom program he or she might want. Voila, a project. Look into possible custom program for client XYZ. You may have an evening orientation event calendared for parents at your son's school that reminds you that you have an issue to resolve about his schedule of classes. Personal or business trips coming up, conferences on your calendar, etc., all should be assessed for projects that deserve acknowledging. There are also very likely still unrecognized projects connected to the next actions on your lists. Many times people we work with have "Call Mario" regarding the fundraising event on their calls list, but have not yet identified "Finalize the fundraiser" as something that should be on their projects list. And, though it should be obvious, but at times isn't, there are proposals or contracts to review in your briefcase, forms to fill out for the bank on your desk at home, or a broken watch in your purse that are actually project artifacts. Double-check that you have them all associated with the further and final outcomes instead of remaining workflow orphans. Higher horizon interests and commitments. There is a good chance that you might still have subtle attention on some of your commitments and interests from a longer and higher view of your responsibilities, goals, visions, and core values. A review of the accountabilities you're invested in professionally, the things you need to be doing well in your roles at work, and the areas of your life you need to keep up to certain standards will likely trigger some reminders of things that may have been taking some of your attention, for which defining a project about them will be valuable. If you have professional goals, company objectives, and strategic plans, have you identified all the projects that they should engender for you so that you can move on them appropriately? I have seldom had an executive pull out and review any long-range planning document without her realizing there is at least one project she needs to clarify for herself in regard to it. Are there things coming toward you further out in the future of your personal life that have started to pull on your attention to do something about them? Kids or parents growing older, your retirement, life partners' aspirations, fun and creative things you'd love to start exploring.